C1A, number 17B.
And in giving birth to true manhood, starts individual, starts with our individual perception that only that which God creates is entitled to the term man. And when I see that, I get a lovely touch, a comforting touch, and then I begin to hug it. And I just can't help saying, oh, that's the most dearest, loveliest thing I have ever seen. I keep it for myself. I hug it. I protect it. I cherish it. I value it. I don't let it go anymore. And I begin to be a woman, a Virgin Mary. And I begin to be a Virgin Mary the more I keep it pure, I keep it holy, I keep it untouched from the world, I keep it untouched from the material things in me and the ambition in me. I keep it pure and holy, and then does something, because always we have seen that law in the second subject in prayer, that worshipping something always unfolds something spiritually. And so it always unfolds something, though at first faintly developed. But it doesn't matter if at first it is faintly developed, as long as it is as developed, it's all right, because it becomes big, not faint. And as I see that, I see, all right, then I stick to it. I remain in that nature, and I become an individual representative of it, through the soul. And as I become an individual representative of it, I begin to see that all that is related to this idea, that's really my universe. That's my only true relation. That all ideas which correlate with this beautiful new birth, where I see the identity of true manhood coming to birth, then I see all that is related, and all that helps to this idea, and all that works for this idea, And then comes the moment where I say, now, which one do I like better? That which has been born in me, or that which I have dragged on through my last 40 or 50 years, the mortal? Can I have both? Can I drag along both side by side? And life comes and says, I told you before that only that lives which is of God. So you jolly well have to lay down your mortal sense of life and of men, truth of life. And I may resist it. I may not like it. That's my Eucharist. That's my sad occasion. That's my struggle. But little by little it yields, and it must yield, because the spiritual is always stronger. That which has been born in me is always stronger, and it will always be the victor, and sooner or later I have to yield. And if I don't yield, happily and joyfully, experiences will teach me to yield and force me to lay it down. But scientifically, really, I should love it to lay it down, because the law tells me that it doesn't stop with at that point. That the law of the days of creation tells me that truth as life pushes me to truth as truth. That's the law. I know that it can't stop at in the middle. And when it pushes me into truth as truth, I begin to see that the spiritual idea of true manhood is not only my manhood, but is manhood itself. It's the compound idea of man, and it's the manhood of everybody, and therefore it's the blessing for everybody. And therefore, here in truth as truth, it says it revolutionizes the world, but it also brings in the millennium. That's what we do. That's what each one of us does. The moment we give up the smallness and the littleness of our purpose of life, the moment we give up the false sense of truth of life, the moment we are no more interested, what do I get out of this? How much have I got out of this thing? How much will I get out of this spiritual idea? The moment I let go of all the littleness and smallness of life, of being worried about all the thousand little problems which any human life brings with it, which the world of today must bring with it, because the world of today is, by its own definition, a world of problems. The moment I let that go down the drain, then I free myself wide enough to the truth, to the point of truth, the truth where I see that I do a far bigger job than I can humanly conceive of, that I'm revolutionizing the world. The job Jesus did in his 30 years of lifetime is so small compared with what its far-reaching effects were for the whole world. Truth is truth. The moment he laid down the mortal, the moment he turned his back on his 30 years, with doing here a kind deed and there a kind deed, here helping somebody and there helping someone, the moment he turned his back on truth and life and went on to truth of truth, he began to become the universal salvation. Where today still that Christ is working changes and wonders and marvels and giving to the whole world a new line and a new purpose and a new direction, and it's still that. Well, what is this Christ? It's not personal. It's the consciousness. Who can have that consciousness? Everybody can have that consciousness. We can have it. You can have it. Each one of us can have it. What an influence we are in the world. But, as you have seen yesterday, the world doesn't appraise it. The world will not come and say, well, you are wonderful people. They won't. Not the single component part can the world measure right about the Christ. So we don't have to go and listen if the world feels that what we do is great. It's the Christ law of the 7 days here which tells us how great we are. If that consciousness is at the point of truth to truth, we are one with God. God is with us, not only with me, with us. And that Christ, that unity of God and us, is revolutionizing the world and is bringing in the millennium and helps us, as she says, to the perception of infinite possibility, that universality. That's the compound idea, man. The perception of infinite possibility. That's what is translated to us. Can you see the infinite possibilities? I can. Sometimes the more quiet I am, and you can, and you do, I know you do, you tell me so, the more quiet we are, and the more still we are in consciousness, the more we see what we have touched as a sign that John Dolly has sealed up. Can you know when you break the seal, what you say? Unsealed, really. Mrs. Eddy, you remember that Mrs. Eddy said when she finished the last revision of Science and Health in 1907, she said to one of her pupils, I think it was Sarton, that now I have sealed my discovery to such an extent that I can't hide it anymore, or that I can't hide it more, or it will never be discovered. She hid it. She was the woman who hid it in 3 meters of needle. Until the time was right that some people, some mentalities, are willing to tackle Christian Science not at the point of truth and life, as life, namely at the point of what does it do to me, to demonstrate the Son of Man, but at the point of truth, the truth of the calculus of truth, where we are willing to see the implication of this whole science on the world and on the future, of seeing that to counteract so-called material sciences, we need a spiritual science. And up to Mrs. Eddy's time, material science seemed to be a blessing and seemed to be something to be supported and seemed to be something which had a silver lining. Today, we know that material science has no silver lining, that it is the most dangerous thing for humanity, that if it isn't handled carefully, properly, that it just will kill the whole thing. And there is only one thing that can counteract material science, individually, collectively, and universally, and that's spiritual science. And there is no spiritual science in the whole world which has been discovered up to now, except this system of spiritual ideas. There is no other. So I wonder sometimes if we are aware of what we are doing. Just ask the disciples of Jesus weren't aware what they were doing. They were going with Jesus just as other prophets had their disciples. They found a jolly good teacher and a jolly wonderful man. And when he was no more there, they turned their back and went fishing until they awoke to what it was. But they couldn't really grasp the implication of Jesus' mission when he was there. And it is our job to be clear about what the implication is, what we are doing. If we are, then we also have the love for it, we have the willingness to sacrifice something for it, Then we enjoy to put everything into it. Then it's no more a sacrifice to put anything into this work, but it's a joy and it's a grace and it's beautiful and it's invigorating and happifying, and then we go forward. So we are revolutionizing the world, and the world must be revolutionized for it can bring in the millennium. So that perception of infinite possibility. And then lastly comes to the tone of truth of love, that shows that this atoning with God, by atoning with God, that we come to the point that we conceive of man as God glorified, as that man which is the man of God. The glorification not of man, but the glorification of God. Perfect womanhood, man. Here we have that, and that passage where from, we speak from the time of resurrection and ascension up to our time. And when you have time to go over this last point, it may help you if you try to see how she compares the Passover with the morning meal. The Passover which she dealt with in the at the point of truth as light, the laying down of the mortals, the sad supper, and comparing it here with the morning meal in truth as love as that happy experience, that other meal. That morning meal which was a spiritual breakfast at the bright morning hour, a joyful meal full of glory, their disciples full of repentance, heart change, pride rebuke, turned away from the material things, cast the net on the right side, learning Christ's truth new. You see, it's a new era breaking in. A new era breaking in where we see, and we always, if we are scientists, we always should see the end of a law. Not the beginning of a law, but the end of a law. It's always that telefinalistic vision which we should have, that we start with mind always with our eye on the last point of love. Here she shows that this Passover has its compensation in the spiritual breakfast. That the Passover, that mournful occasion, is not the end and all of everything, but it's just a transitional state which ushers us finally into that last breakfast, that last meeting, which is full of glory and full of joy. In this last meeting, well, I have only a few minutes left, I just want to point out here that you will feel that everything now focuses into the spiritual, that truth of love. She gives now here the spiritual import of what Jesus' earthly mission was. See, truth of love gives you the womanhood sense, and the womanhood sense in us always perceives the idea behind something. So here we begin to perceive the spiritual idea at work behind the earthly mission of Jesus. And so we find here the climax of seeing that right from the beginning, what has happened was that the spiritual idea has been born, but that spiritual idea was first clouded by a material form, and that little by little Jesus showed us to look through that material form until lastly he showed that material form was only a shadow and fell, and he appeared anew in the spiritual. And so all is about that newness of life as spirit, discerning Christ through anew. His spiritual meeting was in the dawn of a new life. So the disciples arose into newness of life of spirit. We can unite with the church only as we are newborn of spirit. Can you see that newness? That was a spiritual breakfast, a spiritual meaning, a spiritual ascension above matter or the flesh, a spiritual communion with the one God. See now what she said before. He was fundamentally endowed with the fullness of the spiritual. We are fundamentally endowed with the fullness of spirit, with the divine spirit in its fullness without measure. And our whole birth that goes on is what Mrs. Eddy said to that student, is that we become less material. that the spiritual birth is nothing else than to see that the material is no fact, that material is not the creator, God is the creator. That put to silence the material law of generation for the spiritual development. That, furthermore, it counteracted the law of an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth, and counteracted that through that spiritual nature which said, I stay with that spiritual nature. I'm not going to leave that spiritual nature. I remain the same loving, kind, love-giving quality of man. And so little by little, you see, the material clothes, so to say, the material form, the material concomitant, so to say, fall, until at last we come to the point of womanhood again. You see, it started with the Virgin Mary. Here it ends again with that womanhood sense, which can see right through and see, well, the whole thing really was the birth of a spiritual idea freeing itself from a material form. Well, I want to stop here because we unite, as you know, at a quarter past two. Quarter past two. Is that all right? So that those people who are from the country can go home at quarter past four.